Honorable members, DOG, Ms. Sindane and the team, members of the media and officials, you are most welcome to this meeting. I will advise the DG not to give you documents in advance because you read. I'm no longer interested in coming to the meeting because you have seen what is coming and you are happy. So next time maybe we'll give you this at last minute. DG, we don't want to waste your time. Some of our people are coming in slowly. So we will open the floor for you. They will catch up with us.
Thank you very much, Ms. Shatterton, honorable members, colleagues, and good morning. Shatterton, we have a very tense team. It's not because anyone has gone anywhere, but we always try to expose people into the parliamentary processes. So my team, let's thank you, allow me for being here.
Thank you. It's an opportunity for you to write a good CV for the record.
And I'm not going to send them from the department. Jonathan, in line with our empowerment objectives, we've decided to empower a whole lot of our managers, especially young, good looking ones. So.
So
the presentation, if the Honorable House allows us, will be led by Ms. Mpashelenza. She is the head of our strategy in the department. She will lead the presentation. She will be assisted by Salome, and we will assist them along the way if
That's what we prefer to see. Because you don't have to prove yourself. Thank you.
Honorable members, colleagues. We are going to give a quarterly report for the first quarter for all our programs, program one, administration, program services, state legal services. We also include program four, national prosecuting authority, and under program five, we begin with the RDS project. Then we conclude. Just to touch on the vision of the department, is many of our documents an accessible justice system that promotes institutional values, the mission to provide transparent, responsive, and accountable justice services for all, principles and values, constitutional values and a cut of human rights, promotion of the rule of law, particularly principles, governance, good governance, with improved professionalism and continuous improvement and transparency. The strategic goals of the department, also in our strategic plan, the first is an efficient, effective, and development-oriented administration. Improved administration supports the justice system, enabling efficient resolution of cases, and that includes civil, family law, and criminal cases. The third is the provision of quality legal services that strengthen the capacity of the state. The fourth is promote constitutionalism and strike justice to contribute to social cohesion. And lastly, the key highlights for the quarter. The first one is that we have now included Yamana's Dutch Stellenbosch areas where we using municipal buildings to meet a piece of the local municipal court. So that means he has given more access to justice for people in these areas. The second is that we have handed over the mortal remains of Mr. Nesha from Sasanyati and Mr. Tamsanya Koto. Those remains have now been handed to the families We are very proud of the department about the closure for the family. And a big highlight for us is that a total of 44,988 criminal cases were finalized through ADRM against the record of 88,027. As you remember, ADRM allows us to finalize cases without doing any existing procedures in matters that are relevant. We have provided services in 50 operational CCCs. We know that CCCs or the Tuzela Care Center are one of the key areas where we give services to the most vulnerable, and so we are happy that we have more operational CCCs working. And finally, we have recovered a little bit of money through poker, and we have covered the case. The detail of this is in the other report. We have provided a web document for the other report, and we will be giving the highlights in this presentation. What are the key challenges then for the department? Understanding on infrastructure remains a challenge. Firstly, we pay on invoice. The invoices are coming as quickly as we'd like to, and continue to chase. And issue that the members would be aware of working with the DPW. And the very thing is one of our challenges. And the OSD issues, we're working hard on trying to resolve them, but they still remain issues. Thirdly, the underpayment or the underpending of the criminal justice system, IJS, spending remains a problem due to fit-up problems, and these are also known to the house and has been discussing detail with this house. We are trying to fill some of the key vacancies in the senior management arena, DDG constitutional development, and other chief directors, including the chief director for facilities management. We are working hard to ensure that that is done. And within the NPA side, we are still having capacity constraints, particularly on the investigative side, that doesn't allow us to do as well as we could in some of the targets on persecution. So those are our key challenges. Performance overview. We have the 8 KPIs that we will be reporting on for the first quarter, and of those, 51 had their targets achieved. And we go through them per program. In program 1, we have 83% of the indicators have been achieved. In program 2, all of them have been achieved. Program 3, 77% of them have been achieved. Program 4, 75%. And program 5, 0%. But we go through the programs one by one. Starting with program 1, the expenditure report on program 1. We have a budget of 1.9 billion under program 1, and we've already spent 200.6 of it. It's sitting at 11%. Like I already indicated, spending is not where it should be under office accommodation, and that's because I mentioned two issues. The first is we are chasing invoices where we are not paid, and two, we are dealing with some of the challenges we have with the industry. We have provided, like I said, a quality report where we are giving all the CAs of performance against all the CAs indicators. In this presentation, we will deal with only those indicators where we are not doing well. So we will discuss why we are not doing well and what their corrective action is. So that the rest of the indicators that are green will be in the way document. Now, under problem 1, the indicators that are underperformed. A number of audit projects completed by internal audit. We had a target of 21, we've done 41. This is due to the unplanned audit cycle that we needed to be assisted with just before the final auditor general audit that happened in quarter 1. So we do, the area are aware of the issues, and by the second and the third quarter, we will have gone through the level of support. So that's the only indicator under program 1 that the government achieved. Now under program 2, expenditure report, we are doing fairly well at 23% spending by quarter 1. The expectation is we need to be between 20 and 25% spending by the end of the first quarter, and we are more or less at this area. So we are fifth around the expenditure performance rate. So everybody said underperforming teams, no indicators were underperformed, so there are no discussed in this presentation, but the performance is in the team. Moving on to problem three, the expenditure at the end of the first quarter was 81%. We are pleased with that. The only area where the performance is within problem three that's lagging behind is institutional development, and this is mostly due to the fact that there are some posts that haven't been seen, including the DDG institutional development, and we are working hard at FMC. So once that those posts have been filled, we will see that the spending increase. Under problem three, the only indicators that we are grappling with that are not at the correct level under the masters is the percentage of letters of appointment on estates. The performance balance is that 95% of those cases are defined, or the letters of appointment issued within 15 days, and 93% of those are issued within 15 days. So it's also not far off. Again, the target of 95, 93 is not far off. I mean, the vast majority of the letters of appointment are done on time. So that should be noted. And the second one is the performance standard against guardian funds. We must ensure that within, after receipt of all the documents, we must pay the money within 40 days. And there again, the target is 92% of all those matters must be done within 40 days. We are at 89%. Also, not far off. The issues within the master's area is we are still implementing ICMF TIF or ICMF APALEX processing within master's and moving from office to office. So there are challenges from time to time that cause a little bit of underperformance in some of the indicators. But we have, where we are not performing well, we will be putting things in place to ensure that we can perform at standard. Just to continue, the bankruptcy methods as well, we are supposed to issue certificates within 10 days or in 87% of the methods, and we just meet the target and are at 86%. Again, we will be working to ensure that we reach the target. Similarly, 10.5, under liquidations, we also will be working to ensure that we reach the target. Like I said, it's not far off. It doesn't want us to stretch too much. Moving on, under problem three still, under our promotion, the key indicators there, the first one, number of people reached through awareness campaign and popularization of socio-economic rights. Our quarterly target was to reach 1.25 million people through those programs. Some of those programs include TV channels and etc., but we've only reached 2,590. We are confident that our awareness campaigns will get to the expected amount. The quarter one has been a slow start in this area, but we are expecting that by the end of the financial year we get this target. We've never had problems reaching the annual targets in this area, and we believe as usual we will get there. Similarly, the number of municipalities who participated in the National Action Plan for xenophobia, our target was 20, we've only done 2. Again, there's indications that we will have to speed it up by the year. This is only quarter one. By the end of the financial year, we would have ensured that the target is reached. Within the GRC, we are supposed to do needs analysis. And our target is to complete needs analysis in 6 identified communities. For the first quarter, we're supposed to at least deal with 1 of those. We haven't finalized those needs analysis because of the delays in the engagement. But the follow-up will be done with the affected communities to ensure that we get there. Again, we are not worried we will eventually get to the target by the end of the financial year. Now moving on to problem 4 of the department, the target for the problem under NTA is 3.3 billion. We've already spent 812 of that, spending at 24%. We are confident that we are on the track with the program. areas of underperformance, just to touch on the MTA, because it's of interest to a lot of members of the community. We have a few indicators that they haven't performed on, but we note that in our own quarterly report that we have provided, that we have good support, particularly under cybercrime, as we know it's been difficult to convict under cybercrime, but the target for the quarter in the web document indicates 74% and we are at 96% conviction rate on cybercrime. We are very happy about that. And I would like to report to this council as well that the number of government officials that have been convicted of corruption, the target was 52 for the quarter, we achieved 80. So we are proud of that as well. And finally, the recovery of officials of money from government officials involved in foreign corruption. The target for the quarter was 86,000 and we performed at a level of 269,160. So it's much, much higher than target. So those three indicators would have are in the quarterly report, and because it's worth noting because it's of major interest to people in the house. So where is it that we did not perform as well? Is number of criminal court cases analyzed with a verdict in the lower court? Our target was to get to 81,684. We only got 77,172. And also conviction rate in organized crime is not far off. The target is 90%, we are at 88%. There, the issue lies with court utilization. That issue has been discussed within this house as well. But secondly, complexity of organized crime has also been discussed in detail. But we will continue to check this and ensure that we get to the correct level of performance by the end of the financial year. Conviction rate in complex commercial crimes, also the current 93% quarter one, we performed as close to 92%, not far off target. But the second one, number of persons convicted of corruption or offence relating to corruption for amounts over 5 million, we are not doing well at all. And again, this talks to the complexity of the matters and the delay in the court. So that the people that are convicted or that are accused for those amounts would have also the delay tactics. So, but we still will try our best to ensure that the performance gets to the correct level. The percentage of cases reported at CTC, that is referred to cause of prosecution, our target is 51%, we performed at 43%. This is because there was a substantial number of non-arrest dockets that we have, but the NTA is aware of it and we will be waiting to ensure that the performance is brought to the correct level. The percentage of witnesses and the persons that work off the witness protection program. The aim really is for that no one should be working off the program, and unfortunately two people walk off without informing the NTA. We are disappointed about that, but we will investigate it and ensure that this does not happen. We're now moving on to program 5 of the department. I did indicate that there's understanding in this program. And instead of, or we were meant to, or our budget is 976 million for the year, and we've only been just at 44 million for the quarter, so we're sitting at 5%. Again, the issues of CETA have been discussed in detail, and we will continue to engage the correct people and ensure that we bring the performance to a better standard than what we see on the board. Within this program, us as a department are supposed to ensure that our IJMS systems are integrated with IJS. We have our own programs within the department to ensure that happens. Unfortunately, that problem has been delayed somewhat. In quarter one due to the issues that we were trying to get our third-party funds system developed. So there has been a delay, but we are confident that by the end of the financial year, we will perform to the correct level. Now, the number of tuna cases postponed via ADR, the ADR is important to us because then it means we don't have to transport the inmates on the road, just for postponement. However, there are problems with a few sites where we did not use the ADR system. There were issues of under-utilization on one hand, and on the other hand, there were issues of system. So both those are being taken care of under the leadership of number. So we are confident that this indicator will get to the right place by the end of the financial year. So in conclusion, we will continue to track the performance. As a department, every month we hold a performance expert to track and deal with the issues coming out of our performance report, so that by the end of the year we get to the level that we want. We are confident then that with that we will be able to send a good annual report at the end of the financial year. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So you could as well have come along. Did you have any other inputs?
I'd like to make two inputs of a strategic nature. I think this year we are reporting the state of time as the Department of Justice without the Office of Chief Justice as part of our report, except in areas where we are sharing responsibility between the two offices. So that is the first thing. Why I'm at that, just to report and inform the House that yesterday we lost Judge Weir, and we should have started with that, my apology. And it's just for now for information sharing, but I think as issue develops in the family, I am sure the chairperson and the meeting and the committee members will be informed as to all the arrangements that should be in place.
Yes, thank you. We were informed the Correctional Service Council yesterday, and we observed a moment of silence. So we will await further information then.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. The second development that happened as late last year is, given the fact that the current NPA Act makes NPA part of the Department of Justice, and in terms of the except of course for prosecutorial services, and I must make this very clear. And then in terms of the vote, NPA was always reporting under Program 4, but reporting separately, I think in part because of just the historical reasons that are known to the committee, but secondly and more importantly, because at that time NCA's books and finances were not that great, and ours were not that great, so to compound the problem was going to be problematic. But now that both sections have started showing some signs of improvement. Of course, NPA has improved in leaps and bounds compared to the current. It is now a little more practical to then combine some elements of reporting. What we are not going to do here, Chairperson, is to deal with the responsibility of the National Director of Public Prosecution to come to Parliament in his own right, as it were, to present about issues of the prosecution strategy and all related issues associated with that. So what we are not doing is there falls outside this report, and I just thought it would be an important development to highlight as an accounting officer. The other development highlight is that, of course, you would have read about some call it restructuring that has happened in the NPA in the recent past, and I'm not going to talk to that except to indicate specifically how it has impacted us, that restructuring. Dr. Silas Ramaide has been given the responsibility to look after corporate services and responsibility of the NPA, and so to the extent that he has that responsibility, and therefore he has delegations from myself to give back to the prosecutorial support function to the NPA. that is why he is here with us, to give a voice to how they are going to be implementing the corporate services strategy for the NPA firstly, and secondly, align the expenditure of the NPA with that of the department, because in the year or at year end, we are going to be combining our annual reports. As you see in this year's annual report, we have already started combining the two annual reports. So those are two, I guess, key governance developments that have happened in the year under review. So perhaps, Chairperson, in rounding off our performance report, I think to be sincere, the generally in the best quarter, we perform more or less around the same level. But I think this year's performance would have been stunted a bit because of all these changes that I've just explained, that we are trying to find each other and find a mechanism that will work well for us. Hopefully in the next few quarters we would have consolidated all of those, and hopefully by year end you will see an improvement in the annual report. And finally, to the extent that, and as an accounting office, I always have to assure South Africans, we know there are difficult issues, and we know that you know that there are difficult issues that we are dealing with. There is a specific focus, and I know you will ask us questions on this. I'm not preempting questions, but I just want to share with the meeting that the specific focus that we are paying on the state attorneys, the visiting persons of the state attorneys throughout government, engaging with government on how to approach the state attorneys for whatever support that they may need. And that we would wish, because we are working on big documents right now, we would wish at some point to come and share all those developments with this Honourable House. And the Chairperson and the member will recall as well that last time we were here to present our strategy, we were asked very specifically to look at a few specific things. And one of those things would have been the traditional courts policy framework, as well as the traditional courts bill. It would have been the issue around paralegals. It would have been, of course, the finalization of the end stage of the superior court, and as well as the finalization of the end stage of the lower court. There is a long-term work that we are going to come to the concrete report on, but it's all developments now that we are doing behind the scenes. As soon as we are done with those developments and they've gone through the normal government approvals by our own internal government structures, we should then be able to come and present specifically on those areas of work. So if you don't see them here, it's not like they are not in the plan, but they are not the elements that we report on, because those are big policy issues that we should be presenting to this Honourable House. So Chairperson, we would wish to end that GSI. Thank you.
You know how to disarm me. You really do, because I looked at your report and I think it's a very good report, and it has actually been very well presented with confidence. But you see, the issues that you've raised are the only issues which make us believe that maybe the department is usurping the powers of parliament, because you initiate legislation, we process that in parliament, but there's nothing prohibiting us from initiating legislation, and we believe that we represent the majority of the people in the country that are affected by these traditional courts, which are actually operating outside the law in the country. And we have raised this with your principals, that we don't agree that there should be a concept paper, and we don't agree that this bill should still waste time in government, because we are convinced that the people who are opposed to that bill actually have never been to any rural areas. They don't even speak any of the languages. They never attended any traditional courts, and we can't hold the people of this country hostage because of some intellectuals seated in the big cities. So what we have raised with your principal is that let that bill be introduced in Parliament and be the business of Parliament. And then if there's a need for further consultation, Parliament will deal with that. We think that we have too much important work to do other than to work on a bill for 20 years. And the question of paralegals, so many conferences have been held on this whole thing, but I've also found that you are being delayed by the paralegal organizations themselves, their own differences. But also, the paralegal practice is not meant for those organizations, it's meant for the people that need access to justice. So again, I don't think we should be held hostage by people. I can tell you that next year everybody will be focusing on local government elections, then the next thing is other elections, and then we'll not achieve much in the coming time. So we need to use this time now to speed up things. But I hear you have not referred to the insolvency regulations. I don't know what is the latest development on that. If you can say something about it, and then I'll open the floor for the members.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. We have noted the approach. We will go back and we will address the approach. In relation to the insolvency legislation and regulation.
Sorry. Okay, sorry for the interruption. There's another department at work.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. To the extent that maybe I can take the honourable meeting to the focus. There was you'd recall that there was an approach to court to our new insolvency arrangements that we are putting in place, the legislation, the insolvency policy that was going to guide legislation. The past few months we've been walking up and down the court, and unfortunately we lost in court. We approached, if my memory serves me correctly, the Supreme Court of Appeal on that, and the issue that was a point of difference was our understanding of PDIs or BEE in the context of the Insolvency Act. So we have had to go back to the drawing board in light of the appeal decision. And so that way we should be able to be bringing, because it's not like we are redoing every aspect of the insolvency policy as well as regulation. We are just going to be redoing the bit that the court struck off as it were, if I may use the language loosely. However, the work on the ground is ongoing. We had already done a lot of work in terms of vetting the insolvency practitioners, in terms of reintroducing new mechanisms in terms of evaluating people who must form part of our panel of work. So the everything has been done. Everybody has re-registered, at least those who wanted to re-register themselves, so that we know we clean up our database way, because those deal with like some of the areas that we had limitations on, where the people that we were using were on our database and people were outside our database we were not using. So we kind of cleaned out our database as far as it has been reasonably possible. With all that we had published for people with interest to come in and register. So all of that has been done. We wanted by the 1st of April this year to be starting with a rollout of the policy. Now with this limitation, we then have to go back and then relook at what are the implications of the court decision, how to then get around implementing some of the things that the court had directed, and then be able to publicly announce how are we moving forward on that.
Thank you. Honorable members, Honorable Reitenbach is gone. Honorable Stefano, I don't see the DG having problems with your hand. So, proceed.
Thank you, honourable members. I just really think on the area comment by the DG, etc. Yes, indeed, our principal did bring to our attention the need to prepare the traditional social cost thing, etc. In fact, that is in the time frame that articulated, and that has been taken into account. And just wanted to allay the fears of the House that the process was not approved, the policy formation process. So it's not a discussion document we said to consider. It's basically a prepared document sketching out the where we come from and the issues whatever, so that the bill must be looked in the context of what has happened already. And we believe that the kind of information will benefit the process of engagement on the bill as well as taking those forms. So that we do not basically handbag the chair said by the country chair, not any interest in the matter. So the report simply spell out what has happened, but the process of drafting the bill is part of the process. So
what are the time frames that the
that we have been given very strict time frames by the ministers, and I think following the recent interaction between the minister, the prince, and the chairperson, we have been told that the introduction of the bill must happen far off the end of this year. So we have been working in those tight times. So I don't want to indicate that we have taken, we are working around the view of the committee. We are not reinventing the wheel of looking at the political process. We are drafting, but we want to present to the minister to present cabinet in the House a kind of a rapport of why the taken our time to do what we are, so that we don't follow the same kind of circumstances, etc. And what issues, so that even the profile of those who have made substance and the profile of the people so on are inarticulated to have accelerated the process. So I'm sure that the DG and the minister will soon respond in terms of the process.
No, thanks very much. I think we have to prove that information. You see, sometimes if we are not informed, we tend to think things are not happening, whereas we are doing very good work. Honorable Breitenbach asked to be excused, and Honorable Horn will play two roles, and they are ready to do that. Any hand? Honorable Jacques, Honorable Horn, Honorable Mutasa.
To thank the department for the presentation, and to say that in terms of lawmaking processes, it's also important when you do amendments also to brief us as a committee as to why amendments. So you don't just see a bill coming in and you don't understand why now we are making amendments. It's very important. In terms of the report that you've given, I don't know whether you took some of the entities like South African Rights Commission into consideration, I know that they are independent special police, but they have budget, not within your budget. Just for them to actually indicate as to where they are in terms of spending. It will be important for us to know. I'm quite worried by the continued underperformance of software. And it's across the board in the Department of Justice or Correctional Services, because there are certain processes that are not really coming to fruition because of the underperformance of the software. Yesterday when we were talking to Department of Correctional Services, we lamented about CCTV. We've been talking about it for the past 3 years. And of course the IDA's program is underperforming. I think in the previous financial year we didn't even utilize the budget. Whatever is the problem, let's look at it carefully, put the magnifying glass in it to make sure that we manage to deal with whatever could be a challenge. The research commission is underperformed 15%. Maybe if we can clarify the issue, what the underperformance is all about. And also, my concern would be also be around the large number of vacancies that they had. To my understanding is there's something like almost 300 vacancies. Can you give us an idea as to how far they have gone with it? As to whether we are actually improving in that regard. Could you tell us, care centers, there's a program for the performance is at 42.6%. I want to ask one of them, and I wonder whether they are really taking good care of. Who is directly responsible for them within the department? Are they really getting proper attention? This is what I'd actually be interested to know. And why would people walk off the witness of protection program in this time riddle South Africa? We need to go back to those two cases and understand why. So that whatever was wrong should be fixed in order for us to really manage to deal with these cases properly. Because otherwise then it means that you're not going to be in the position to get enough evidence to convict. If we have witnesses going off the witness, were they just going off the witness for the protection price, but they continue to become witnesses? That's what I need to have clarified. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, ma'am. Honorable Hall.
Thank you, Chair. In addition to what the Honourable Kulani Majaki has said in respect of software, I think the other thing that is a recurring nightmare when you come to this committee is infrastructure and the understanding on infrastructure development. And maybe, Jay, as the department keep on reporting these things, we must as a committee keep on saying that this is not good enough. On page 24, I think the last sentence they might mention corrective action being put in place where necessary. So I think, one would have to ask the question what corrective action has been put in place. I mean, the CBUS and the DPW are constantly the source of the irritation, but the fact is solutions are really what we're looking for. In respect of a few other things in report, on page 18 there's mention of the number of criminal court cases finalized with a verdict and an underperformance. However, I would venture to say that I know there's targets and I know the AG is all about targets, but a more realistic way to look at this is how many cases entered the system. So if you can maybe just give us info as to whether that was a cause for the underperformance and whether there's delays and postponements that lies at the root of the problem. Because then obviously the Efficiency Enhancement Committees, which we have been informed of as a committee by the Office of Chief Justice, is not functioning well. And then, Chair, in respect of also the same page, the 87.7% conviction rate in respect of organized crime, as the department rightly say, this is complex cases. So I would also, in that respect, would like to know what the number of cases was that were handled, and because that can give us a better indication. If you have one case and you finalize it 100%, if you have 10 or, 20, you finalize 17, then you don't meet target of 90%. So, if the department can maybe give us a bit of info there. And then the same on page 9, where the corrupting cases bigger than 5 million, if the department can give an indication as to how many are currently in the system. We know that from the past there has been underperformance in respect of this KPI as well, and then all of a sudden there's an overachievement in one quarter. So that may be going to allay some of our fears if that can be addressed in that same vein. And then lastly, Chair, the issue addressed by the DG, just by way of a few informal remarks in respect of the restructuring and the fact that it hasn't had an impact on the effectiveness of the department and possibly the prosecution services. I just want to understand as to how much were the department involved also in the restructuring processes at the NBA. It's a difficult situation to be in, but the fact is that Dr. Amaiti, who is here, I think is deemed to be a career prosecutor. And he's been head of specialized units. He's a doctor, not because he's a medical doctor, but he's a doctor in law. and to the best of my knowledge, he even holds ex-state status. So it's just a bit of a question in my mind whether he, for example, is best utilized now being the head of corporate services. But if the department tells me that they were not consulted or they were not part of the decision making, then that's fine. Then we might ask the question at another meeting. But as the DG addressed this meeting here, I would just have
Honorable Hall, I heard from other people that a deemed person is not a realtor. That's why we have deemed traditional paramount leaders. So I thought you'd say he's a known prosecutor, not a deemed one. Okay, Honorable Chapo.
Let me start by thanking the department for bringing such a very powerful delegation, extended of which are women. That's very good. And again, on the issue of traditional constitutional system, advocate Sofan, you know that this traditional constitutional issue has been taking on for quite some time. And the traditional communities at home are very, very angry about delays which are caused by the department. And one of them are not saying it's the department. They are saying, you know, Parliament doesn't want to pass this bill because maybe because it affects rural communities. So So, I just want to use the location of development to expedite the process. At the last time of the we said that the event of by the end of November, as we told you, we're saying October, isn't it? We're saying Honorable Ajaki, at least by the end of this month, we can have the system to do something. Because I will always refer to this. As of now, only section, you know, the rule of PG, section 12 and 22 of the administration act
are increased. So when traditional court, someone, committee members who are at fault to traditional court, and those ones are recalled accordingly, it's a nightmare. Because you don't know what to do. At least in Mangwen, we have the cooperation chair of Magistrate Zibwana. Who's cooperating? We go to him, and then we invite those people that want to come. But if this process is expedited, we'll be very much happy. And traditional communities will have access to justice. So, again, the issue of as alluded to by Honorable Majority, high rate vacancy. Last time we informed that the position for magistrates will be advertised. There were about last time 400, but may we kept that place as to how far now? Again, very scarcity of interpreters and language practitioners. It appears the vacancy rate has risen by 2.4% subject to correction. So how far now? And the probation officers, social workers, and others like advocates and government practitioners, interpreters, and other related officers. So there's also an allocation of 76 million allocated to NPA for integrated justice criminal reserve project. But it appears on the third quarter, it has never been spent. So we get clarity on that. Why? Then again, modernization of justice IT system, only 11.7% of 456 million has been spent. Why 720? Thank you, Chair.
You know that this committee consists of members of different political parties, and some political parties will be going to the National General Council's conferences before long. And the question of transformation in various sectors has become a huge problem. One fears that if we don't address transformation quickly, your good work may be overshadowed by politics. Because the politicians are not going to look at the good things that are done. They are going to single out one or two things and then focus on those things and rubbish everything. And your good names may be tarnished not because you don't know what you are doing, but because people are going to find one or two things. You know, for instance, when I met some people who say they were picketing before Parliament, and these are advocates from the Cape Bar. I haven't had the other side, but the picture that they point from their standpoint suggests that there are problems of transformation of the legal profession. And I saw a press release by General Barkinson, which says this is a general problem in the Bar Council 20 years after that. And this lack of transformations in these Bar Councils, which already affects the few black advocates that are there, what impact is going to have on the hundreds of youngsters that are at universities? The next thing you are going to find that there's a war in our hands, because this thing is not working. So I think that we should really call on you to look at this matter, because sometimes what we have done is to allow people who are in charge of institutions to have veto powers when it comes to transformation of those institutions. And transformation is a constitutional imperative. We can't be begging people to accept transformation when the constitution mandates us to do so. But also, you know, I know even before 1994, there were many countries that were willing to take South African, historically disadvantaged South Africans, and train them, bring them back. And why can't we pursue that? There will be many countries that would want to afford the young South Africans opportunities for training. Because I can understand that a country with more than 33 universities cannot produce enough people to fill the vacant posts. There could be some gatekeeping by somebody, somewhere. So if we can't deal with the gatekeepers, we must find a way around them. Look at our friends somewhere to help with the training. So I would suggest that, you know, in your spare time, you look at some other possibilities of really empowering the people, because young people are educated but sitting with their qualifications, and they're becoming impatient with all of us, with our institutions. So if we don't address that, we'll actually be destroying this democracy instead of entrenching and consolidating. But over to you, members, put some questions.
Thanks, Jefferson. I can assure Mr. Horn that I'm still a career prosecutor. But unfortunately, I've come to accept that I'm one of those career prosecutors who are unlikely to spend more than 80% of their time in court, that would rather spend more than 80% of their court providing strategic direction to prosecution. So, consider that. I fulfill whatever role I can. And the question of the PCC, the responsibility of the PCC. The soccer, the Sexual Offences Committee, basically, is responsible for establishing the PCC and making sure that they comply with the minimum standards for the existence of the PCC. But once they are established, then it becomes a joint role between the police, for example, health, as well as social services. And that's where the problem kind of lies in managing that relationship once the PCC have been established. But obviously, we always try to ensure that the minimum standards are maintained. I think you also show again the problem of non-arrest dockets in respect of PCC. Those are instances where crime is reported, crime of rape is reported, but no arrest is made. And yet, the victim has already processed through the PCC. Because you cannot wait, for example, for a docket to be opened or for a docket to be completed. You need the person to be at the center as soon as possible. So that in itself creates some kind of a gap, but we are addressing that together with police, as well as with the other stakeholders. And the question of walk-offs, the difficulty there is the office does not provide 24-hour protection. It's only very necessary in terms of how the protectors themselves actually make a determination of the effects of the cruiser that arise. Now, the walk-offs that we're talking about are not walk-offs of witnesses themselves. They are in the main walk-offs of relatives or witnesses or related persons. And there it's actually very difficult to control the predator movements of such persons. The reality is, once a person, even if that person is not a witness, but is a related person, is brought onto the program and registered as a protected witness, he or she is regarded as a protected witness, irrespective of the fact that the person is not a witness in the case. And then the issue of the lower number of criminal court cases finalized with evidence in the lower court. The inflow of cases, we can provide you with that information. And the reality is we simply in this quarter did not get as many cases as we should have got. It does not mean that the cases are not there.
they are there, but we simply did not get many that were ready for trial, and that would have led to many cases. But I think in the following quarter and in the outer line court, I'm sure we'll be able to at least see what is actually happening. And the role of the NPPC, particularly with respect to cost utilization, the problem is not across the board. It's only in certain jurisdictions. And we are dealing with that at the PCPC, that is the Provincial Efficiency Management Committee, as well as at the NPPC. I personally attend the meetings of the Chief Justice together with one of the DPPs. So we are addressing that problem. But I must mention that it's not only confined, for example, to it's in all sites. It may very well be, for example, the police. It may also be the driving officers. But at the same time, some prosecutors are also to blame. What we are now actually trying to do is to make sure that we have at least one person from each role player taking charge of at least in the first instance the enrollment of cases, the running of cases, and the finalization of cases. So I think we should be able to address that problem. And then the issue of organized crime cases, it's not only a question of complexity of the case. That's nearly compounds the problem. The problem is a number of them actually take much longer to investigate, whereas the cases are already enrolled, but the investigations are not complete. So we have such challenges there. But we are now trying to adopt a situation where we are going to have a more dedicated, organized component at national office, which will at least oversee basically the running of the major organized crime cases in the country. We do hope that will address the problem. But just on the question of the corruption cases, involving case by amount of more than 5 million. Our annual target was 20, and well, the quarterly target we had is 5. But unfortunately, this third quarter, we did not have enough cases that were ready to be placed on controls. So hopefully, by the coming quarter, we should have at least some cases, and hopefully, we will cover up as time goes on. But it actually does create a problem because of the slow flow of the cases, so that at times we find it very difficult to actually achieve our annual target at the end of the day. But we are aware of the problem and we try to get it under control. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Is that this question?
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Taken note of what Honorable Khoshim Adin Chava said about Stockholm's bill, and we will the DG has really been putting pressure on us, and we're working on it to make sure that we meet the deadline of November, the submission of the bill. And I'm sure Honorable Chair and the Honorable come to what we receive will basically compensate the time we have been upon here, because it's the interest that this process should not be stifled again, should move. That's why we are putting everything to make sure that we cover all corners for the committee, and even from the research support that's required to move on this process. You'll also, one aspect which was never raised during the primary process, which we thought must be highlighted, which I could have shared with you, people have deliberately not highlighted that the system is dysfunctional, not only with the whole system, but I think the current system in all terms is dysfunctional. And it creates a lot of problems for ordinary people, not for those who can focus on it, for people who live upon the system, by the social communities. And I think that must come up so that it becomes very clear. So we do commit that we'll actually deal with the system. On the second point by Honorable Dylan Madam, coincidentally, the meeting of the Master Commission was this past Friday. And we spent quite a deal of time to look at the capacity and the issues that pertain to that environment. Especially the rate of the vacancies were brought by the fact that for the first time in 21 years, the minister created 117 new positions of magistrates. Before that time, the commission was running a vacancy rate of about 50. And that's given by the fact that they advertise every quarter or so. They try to advertise twice a quarter before then. But the province was taken, where they centralized all the appointments to one point. And because of the challenges of faith, because you find all the people applying, all the posts everywhere in the country. So if you have interviews taking place in Northern Cape, KZN, and whatever, so you have the same person spending 1 month attending interviews from one area to another. So when you come here, it becomes a nightmare, etc. So that's why they centralized, so that they could then find a better mechanism of getting all this arrangement. That was what we have left with this process, whatever, etc. But currently, the commission has worked and they've finalized the interview. They've interviewed more than 300 people for 187 positions, and they've made recommendations. And those recommendations will be before the minister. An appointment will be made before the end of September of 187. Which is going to basically to raise the current vacancy system. There's one aspect that the commission took time to do by this Friday. One, that the law assistance, it says that every magistrate before appointment must have undergone training prescribed by charging, etc. So we have even put money aside to empower charging to run those programs concurrently. So they had to get an entire 10 million from court services to put in place for extraordinary programs for these people, etc. So the plans represent the newly appointed people, which we hope that are going to make a great inroad into social transformation from a gender perspective and racial demographics. The appointment take place with effect from the 5th of November. Which means by the end of September, the commission has given the minister the recommendations of 187. The minister will have appointed all the appointments during October, and the training will commence from the 1st of November, and the 187 will be ready and content to start in the court at the 1st of January to close the 187 gap. So that's the problem that comes from them. And because we've taken 2 years to fill these loopholes mainly, because 187 is one of the new posts plus ordinary posts, etc. There are 126 vacancies which have occurred on the sideline over the time, which will go to advertisement rather, so that they start another process of that thing, etc. So I'm not just indicated the intention that 187 will be finalized at the end of this year. Then they're sort of filling the 126 which have become vacant, which start in the process, etc. In fact, Mr. Treasury has asked for business, asked us to motivate why we've not been able to spend the money they've allocated for magistracy. And the reason was exactly that you don't continue creating new positions when you've got an avalanche of vacancies. Because I'm going to lie there. So once we get 187, the process of 126 is ongoing. Then APF will look into areas of capacity challenges, work and trade posts, informed by the project on the rationalization of methodology. Remember that that process added to assist to identify gaps and where that the people should be rationalized and be taken, the post should be taken into it. So that's work in progress, and we're glad that in terms of the training management, that's linked to that, obviously, we are working on capacitating the magistrates. So that there could be more committee, if there are more committees, there could be more support staff, etc. So some of the things have been planned, etc. And the department has put a real effort to increase the capacity of the secretariat, which is part of the process. But we will keep the Honourable House updated on the process. The last point is very important. Right on the issue of the training of interpreters. I'm sure it's one aspect which has also been identified in the entire.
Thank you, Chairperson. Actually, indicating that Mr. Hadji was
way, which is good. But at the same time, I need to know if the dating processes of all of those magistrates will have taken place by November when they get appointed. Very important.
Yes, absolutely. In fact, as what we did as part of the transition, we must do, we manage the time. They've given us, because across against every vacancy, we are commended between 3 and 5 people for appointment. What the department did to anticipate the time frame, they have taken the initial people who have gone for interviews and started the vetting process just to make sure that they are compliant in terms of their standing in the profession instead of the other professions. And so by the time commission presents this memo on the recommendation, we are halfway in the process of putting traction and working around this kind of things, and we hope that we'll make sure that we eliminate challenges that could basically put the whole appointment process into some kind of difficulty. The issue of the transformation, but also raised in the context, and I think it's one point which forms part of a shared arrangement between the department and the OCJ. I was clearly put it on the service level agreement in terms of Justice College, and I'm sure that the OCJ will announce their capacity around Justice College and the progress. In our meeting with the new head of Justice College, who has started, I think those are part of the programs we should put into place, because there's already been a concern raised that it does not have to change much than everybody else. You forget about all the other people who are in the core environment. So as and when you bring new people and more people of new magistrates who have been in the core environment, they need to be kind of assisted by other people there. So if you find the new magistrates there, not then you'll train central time and Chapter is basically the people that are but those will basically happen at the same time so that there will be any functional system across board. The last question on the social media profession. I think this house should pay itself for a discussion soon. Remember the Legal Tax Act, which established the national forum on drug protection, came into operation on the 1st of February. This Parliament in the Act requires the Minister to submit report to Parliament on the 6 months after every 6 months. On the work of the forum and how they are advancing on the transformation of the profession. Minister has the first report has come to the minister, and the minister has arranged to meet with them, because the minister basically has wanted them to address themselves to how their plan of action programs going to address the issues of transformation and move forward in the future. So that it's not only a report that basically but must show what is the value of the investment by government in the profession. As we put it in the reference, the government is putting money in this transformation because the profession is a failed transformation without money. So the money that they are given in this financial aid in media, it's not because we lack the face of advocates and agents, etc. It's because government wants to get return for investment in terms of the actual tangible programs of transformation that should be driven. So the minister is going to take that program. And in that report, we suggest the clear points that they must address and point to. So when the minister comes to Parliament, can be able to address issues that kind of concern this country. One of the things that the minister said that he wants to deal with one is the whole issue of what the parents with the legal service charter. There was once a time when they put their hands during the president, when they made a statement, they were going to transfer skills, the equities, whatever, the programs, whatever, and there was a charter launch, whatever, and nothing happened about what then happened with commitment. The other process was about how to skill areas where there's a need to develop women and people around the niche areas in the legal system. Around commercial, aviation, competition, whatever it is. What is the person doing around that so that we can discuss the program? And then to that, the minister said, he intends to operate a process where he could even target certain practitioners
for exchange programs where they could be taken to special services so that they can be developed around niche areas, etc. So that when tomorrow vacancies occur on the bench, you have the confidence that the people you are going to appoint are going to deal with those issues. The Supreme Court of Appeal, up to now, they have not replaced the skills of Judge Arons around corporate lawyers. And what they're doing, why are they going to call the prisoner SCA to come and do this? And can I get Judge Arons to come and act? Why are they around this? So unless you identify those areas and start training people around those areas up front, so we're going to fill the gaps, which are going to have their profession, as well as have to the judiciary. And then should the minister say this should be part, then the forum should focus on. And that is why they are giving resources to help develop the field for real transformation, not only being women and whatever, but even improve the quality of officials from those kind of Spanish courses. So I'm sure the minister is going to meet with them around the 3rd or so of September, the forum to raise those issues, after which the minister will present a report to this committee, and I'm sure that there will be then quite a debate around these issues. And I'm sure the minister may even wish to be a the committee may even wish to get the forum to come here and talk to their report so that they can check out Africans. What are they doing with the tax money which are put in this transmission perspective?
DJ, I don't know if you do meet with the Department of Rural Development and Traditional Affairs, because if you look at one of the criticism against the traditional hospital is that it oppresses women, and that can be understandable because in this traditional country it is male, and then you can't link traditional councils and traditional courts, which would mean that women are actually excluded. But the transitional, what we call the Traditional Governance Act, make provision for the transformation of those structures. So if you transform them, automatically women will participate in traditional council and districts. Now, that act is not being implemented. So maybe we should suggest that you meet with the department and that we ask a joint meeting with that committee to address that matter. And I think we should make this a matter of extreme urgency, because this is a problem. But when we dealt with the legal practice bill, there was this question of community service. And the impression that one gained there was that this matter is an option. It depends on which institutions want to make that compulsory. And there's also a question of African indigenous languages as part of the curriculum. Because if you have judges and magistrates and lawyers who don't understand the language of the majority of the people that they serve, and you also have interpreters that are ill-trained, what justice are we talking about? What justice are we talking about? So I think that we should put the matter of the curriculum on the agenda. The introduction of an indigenous languages, you can't introduce all of them, but if you go to Eastern Cape, obviously, Xhosa is a dominant language, Zulu, and Limpopo, three languages there. But students should not get a law degree unless they've passed one of the indigenous languages, because how are they going to apply their law? And the community services, there's no way you can understand these communities unless you work amongst them. So these young students, during their training, they must go and work in the rural areas and meet the real people. And that will also develop their, you know, social consciousness. So I don't think these are matters that should be put back to the future because they create problems now. So I would suggest that you really take this thing, because we can allow professors to determine the pace of the transformation for their convenience. We have to push this transformation at all costs today and yesterday. The other thing, Honorable Bongo, I didn't welcome you because I got it. I could see you had some important messages to pass through, but you are most welcome. We got your apology. You see, in the 90s, there was this forum to address racism. At some time during the past parliament, there were proposals to restructure. I have not heard what is it achieving. I hear the national plan to combat racism. But you have the social, South African Human Rights Commission has got to go and investigate racism at universities. If you investigate it, you'll find it. Because these kids are not being taught the new constitution. Wouldn't it save our time if we were using that forum to get dialogue on human rights and educate these kids? Because if you get a kid from the University of Pretoria, another one University of Stellenbosch, there another one from Limpopo, somewhere in KwaZulu, they are put together in one institution. They don't know each other. They don't grow together. They will be racial tensions. And we could address that through education rather than through investigations. So I suggest that maybe you come back to us and just tell us how is this matter addressed about racism, because I don't think they approach. You know, for instance, South African Human Rights Commission goes and investigates the king of the Zulus for utterances which are said to be xenophobic. But when have we gone to national houses of traditional leaders and educated them on the constitution? We're not educating our people, but we'll put them on trial for things that they don't know. So I think this forum is really a very important forum. Look at ways in which we can use it to educate the people other than address the problem after it has happened. I guess the members would want to put some other questions. I'm just making those remarks for your consideration. Honorable Bongo.
Paralegalism is at the center of what we want to see happening. the issue of the language issues, such a person has also raised the issue of language. So to that extent, because we can start the process, when are we going to achieve a process when we litigate? Litigate general James or Andrea, feeling the litigation. Is that part of the 20, because we have a 28 vision, how to infuse some of those issues so that we start a process? Maybe 2030, when I get into a course at home, then just start speaking in my own language. And Chair also raised the issue of training. And the issue of traditional court, I think, as in yesterday, we want you to assist us. Because as a committee, we legislate. But if you as a department come here, we are not giving us solutions, we are also getting stuck. We will appreciate that you come with A option, B option, and C option, and say, this is what advise us on what we want to do. So that we don't just get other information from agriculture or core and so on our own, but you might be able to elevate and say, on this matter, we're stumbling, okay, and how to go about it. Because we'll sound like a credit record next time. And when you come on the second court, we still raise the same thing. Third court, we still raise the same thing. What will happen next year? When you come next year, we'll be having an attitude. When we release things, we just reject them. Then we sleep less nights. You come here and you feel like you're not taking the blame. So let's just assist one another, bring solutions. And if there's no more than one solution, say A, B, C, we move forward. But other than that, Chair, I think generally we are doing well. But elevate this important issue. So the Chair is always ready. If we can play a record of what you said in our first meeting, and now again, we feel like, I don't know.
Incredible.
So let's elevate this issue, Chair. I think on a serious note, yes.
No, no, thank you.
Thank you, Jefferson. Yeah, indeed, we must continue to bring the show of faith to the department. If you take into consideration where you were a few years ago and where you are now, there's a great improvement. One area that was also a challenge was that at participants. We haven't actually heard as to how you're doing in matters that it is good just to briefly indicate to us. I'd actually ask as to whether you have an idea to how the entities are doing, either in South Africa, as I use South African Life Commission. If you can just indicate as to whether, if the information is available, if it's not available, you can actually provide us with the information later. And I must actually indicate that we are actually happy that we have the NPA here now today, because remember, this was actually going to be a verification. That was the warning that we got from the OUK General. So we're just hoping that this will actually be a process that's going to flow easily in order for us to be in a position to comply. And seeing that the NPA here, I think, and actually also indicating concern about the number of cases finalized, this is impacting heavily on remand detainees. We have a big number of remand detainees, and that seems not to be shifting at all. Regardless of processes that are reported to be put in place, can you assist us with it? So that, you know, next time when we come here and we ask about remand detainees, you should say to us, this is why we did the NP, to actually ensure that we reduce the number of remand detainees, because it becomes quite expensive for the country to be having too many people in the correctional centers, that we are not really sure whether they are supposed to be there in the first place. Let's have people who are committed in correctional centers, because we know they are serving their prison sentence. Because if you look at the budget of our correctional services now, it's 20 million. 20 million. We must actually work hard to bring that budget down. And it's only come down if we, for example, areas of remand detainees, we do something about it. Sadiq, call each other with some delete and forget to do it. Courage. yeah, with the legal practice, yes. It's quite disappointing to hear if a person say that they were just very doing. Really, we have systems in place. When we're dealing with that legal practice, you could see the well opening for the legal fraternity. We must actually make that to be real. And back to the share sisters, because half the entrants in South Africa are based on the slow pace of transformation. And it didn't happen in that way because we don't have legislation that can actually bring about transformation. There's a whole lot of legislation in place, but to some extent, the pace of transformation is still slow. Let's affect the pace of transformation to reduce the kind of tension, data types of tensions that we get in their sectors in South Africa. Even now, if you look at when it comes to area of gender and LGBT centers, lately there has been an announcement that there's going to be by certain sectors support of Google Solar. Please look at it. What it means in terms of illegality. We know, you know, sometimes we do things from the state feeling perspective, sometimes we label them culture and tradition. At the end of the day, you know, anything that violates the constitution of our Africa will be outlawed. If you can give guidance on that before it becomes a crisis, it may not be a crisis. But we just want to be sure that as it proceeds, because South Africa is about culture, South Africa is about tradition, but as long as it's done within the precincts of the law, then it's fine. Thank you, Chairperson.
You raise interesting questions because you see also constitutions all over the world, they also operate in the context of the history and cultures of the people. You know, you take our constitution, it says it recognizes the institution of indigenous leadership and indigenous law. But we go and make a law which says when people claim land, it's known that the people who lost land were traditional leaders. But when people claim land, individuals can come together, mobilize, lobby, and form a CPA when the traditional leader and community still exists. And then here you have a CPA, which now controls the land. You have the traditional leader, who sits there with the community. They don't control the land. Then you have two centers of power. Then you sow the seed of confrontations and conflict. Then people are going to kill one another for the land. Because the CPA is going to establish businesses. Those people who are members of the CPA become richer than the royal council. They start drive big cars. Is that what we want to see? So I also the record judgment now. And the question arises: fine, the courts have the right to take the decision, but Parliament has the right to make the law. Now, if the decision for us means that there can be bloodbath, shouldn't we as the legislature sit back and say, where is the problem? The problem is the two centers of power. So it's not a matter of the courts can finalize. Those are two things. And you know right now, this virginity testing. I remember I attended a meeting in a case that there were full of women from the rural areas who said, whatever the government and the constitution say, we're going to continue doing it because the constitution has never given birth to children. We gave birth to children. Now, we can say, fine, we're going to apply the constitution. But do we want to be at war with the people? the alternative that we go and educate the people. But if we don't educate the people and simply say the constitution does not allow this, we are not helping the situation. So I think we need to do more to educate the people on the constitution and get feedback from them as to their understanding of these things. The last thing I just want to say is colleagues talk about the pace of transformation. Whether it's not possible that you give us updates, you don't have to come to Parliament, you know, where the appeals litigation is going on, you know, like yesterday there was a debate about this impeachment, and then the deputy minister comes and says, we have noted an appeal, but the majority of the members of Parliament don't know about that appeal, don't know the appeal is saying. So you can keep us posted of all this litigation, where you are, so that members of Parliament are able to explain this thing to the people and not just to join debates. Lastly, I'm just wondering, do we have to wait for the minister to meet with the legal forum, or can you let us have the report so that we start reading and applying our mind, so that when the minister comes, we are able to engage meaningfully on that. I think elevating the issues, as Honorable Bonga says, would assist all of us, and so that we know where we are. Any other matter? I think members are satisfied. Can we let you have the same final say?
Thank you very much. I think perhaps in the next round we can just put you in the Department of Justice, all of you, because you now know our business better than we do. I just wanted to write on the point that we hadn't finished answering the question. The colleague has just started, and we don't want to leave you with the intention that we have not had you with the second round on the phone. We had and this is what's happening, and we appreciate the fact that when we come back next time, we are going to populate an additional engine so that we can see these businesses, because right now they are not appearing because they were just in progress for us.
But we believe that we are at the stage where we can put that additional campaign so that it supports this one on strategic matter, strategic and policy matters, and then we can make them visible to yourselves. But, Professor, allow me then to answer the balance of the question, obviously assisted by my colleague. Let me answer the question about two that were raised and they are related. The underperformance of the ICMS as well as the infrastructure. let me start by saying, and I'll start with ICMS first. It is true, if you look at the expenditure only of ICMS, it will look like it is underperforming because, of course, the invoices have not come through for us to check. So to that extent, I will agree and I fully support that. But to the extent that the development work on ICMS is working, I can give you comfort that I'm quite comfortable with where we are with the level of development of ICMS, especially in relation to the integration. But obviously in terms of invoicing, because we can only pay on invoice. On invoicing, we are underperforming that, and I hold myself responsible for that. But I wanted to raise the process, to make the process visible to the Honourable House. Each year we do our plan, we then submit it to Treasury on the overall ICMS, and it's under the Criminal Justice Review project, which the IJS resides, under which the IJS resides. We do our plans, we submit, they look at them and they say, no, we don't like them, and then we read them. So there's a process, and that process only started last year. So this year we were doing it for the second time. And so it's not yet, it hasn't quite gelled as yet. But we know that in the new year, because we have already started with this with next year's program, this year, so that at least we can submit on time. So
part of the underexamination time is precisely because of that, because it was approved very late in the year. So that would be part of the reasons why we are underfunding, because then the actual implementation, if the plan is approved late in the year, then the implementation will run slightly behind. And that is why we are confident that we will catch up. I just wanted to clarify that. The second bit around the infrastructure, I do agree that we have big problems with infrastructure, and I'd like you to focus on the ones that are problematic. But I would also like to indicate that in as much as public works and ourselves, we can't find each other on most of the issues. Public Works has indeed come to the party on most other issues as well. So I know that we are not judged on the things that we have done, we are only judged on ones that we haven't. But I can assure you that we are working a lot better together now than we have in the past. But on the historical areas that were problematic, that's where we have not found a breakthrough. We will, but we haven't as yet found a breakthrough. I was in Nelspruit last week, and the High Court in Nelspruit is looking very good. So those are some of the things that when you look at, you know that you have your own legacy as Parliament, that these courts were built during your time in Parliament, and I can assure you we are looking at every opportunity to ensure that this government has the correct legacy by the time this administration leaves, the next administration can continue its work from there. I just wanted to make that clear. The area around the EP and Human Rights Commission, the BFO will deal with. But let me just, Honourable Chair, in case we want to institutionalize paralegals, last week sometime we were presented with the first cut of how paralegals are going to operate as an institution in terms of the proposed legislation that the team is already working on. So there is some work that is happening behind the scenes, and yes, I acknowledge the difficulties between us and some of the organizations, but we are not going to be delayed too much by that, but we want to find each other so that the legislation doesn't come here and then it's kicked up because the key stakeholder does not agree with some of the things that we are saying in the legislation. But we are looking at a whole range of other issues, innovation around paralegals, chairperson, and around how, because you see, there's the one aspect which is people can go there and do community work, but the person can't survive on community work. At some point, someone must pay for that work, and we are looking at these options of how do we then pay for that. Then, like, because you can't say you send your child to university and they come back and become paralegals and they are never paid and they can't make a living out of that. We want to make it in such a way that they are able to make a living out of it, and it is sustainable, and it continues to provide the service. And these are the creative ways that when we come back, we want to be able to present those innovations to ourselves. And we must apologize, Chairperson, because we don't want you to think that we are usurping the space of Parliament. If that's how it reads, we would really want to undo that narrative, because that's not where we want to be.
It shouldn't lead to the perception.
Yes.
There's no indication that we are doing this.
Okay. And then, Chairperson, in terms of the whether I was consulted or whether the department was consulted on the restructuring of the NPA, one could say yes. I have had a few meetings with the National Director of Public Prosecution individually and of course with the Minister. And so we are aware of some of the developments that are happening in the NPA in aid of ensuring that the NPA performs and focuses more on its core business, which is prosecutorial business, rather than to focus on the administration and let the administrators take care of the administration. So yes, we are in engagement with the NPA. Let me then take us into, and I'm covering ECMS with its expenditure of 26 million of the NPA, because we as the department operate and work on the integrating the little portion of the NPA with every other portion in the JCPS cluster. So it will be affected by the same under expenditure, one, because of the late approvals of the plan, and then secondly, the late invoicing. But work has been going on, infrastructure has been bought, and all of that. But having said that, there is one risk And that's not a risk for the Department of Justice. It's a risk in general that our network is not keeping up as quickly as possible with all the systems development that we are doing and the systems rollout that we have been doing as the Department of Justice. And that's the area of concern. And between us and in general, there are certain decisions which I can't repeat here because they were cabinet decisions that are taking us in the right direction, but that remains an area of concern for now because we do need the network to move with speed when we are paying maintenance in Ekulu, Tala or Emaudi or wherever else. We want the systems to move with speed. So we are in the business of developing systems for the department, and the key three systems that we are working on, Honorable Majak, would be the CPF system. We are hoping to pilot it now in September. As September starts today, we are hoping to move on a pilot on the CPF system. We've just procured a system called the court recording system that replaces the old digital court recording system, and it's a lot of work that goes behind those systems before you can start seeing them being unveiled. But we are hoping that work will be finalized soon, so that we can in our court improve the recording systems in general. And as we develop further, we are also looking at some of the language being able to be captured firsthand in the system, because you know that some of the debate around language has been how do you transform the work that if you were litigating, as Honorable Mr. Bongo was saying, that you have litigated in KZN, and you wanted automatic translation into what would then be the language of record that for appeal purposes and all of that. Those are some of the innovations we are looking at as a department. And so the horizon that we are seeing in our minds, because we are not seeing it because it's not on the table as yet, is the horizon where our department leads, not government, but leads in its own right in terms of the systems of justice that can compare anywhere in the world as we move forward. So that's the level of investment we have made into this. Person, around the issues of transformation of the broader transformation, but let me start at a micro level and just give you a sense of the briefing persons and how we are breaking that down, at least insofar as council is concerned. We will provide further information as we develop our system further to capture the attendees as part of the broader issues. So I won't repeat everything that JB has indicated and the things that the chairperson and honourable member have indicated around the transformation of the legal profession. I can only say in this that the numbers, chairperson, they say generally they don't lie. So we can't remake our story except how we present our numbers for you to see. And to see that actually, even when you look at the breakdown, it's not inconsistent with the consolidated numbers that we were giving you. So we do indicate that in the legal profession, in terms of the female, the levels of exposure, the level of risk that they have been getting over time is not great, but that is also supported by the fact that the number of females in various bars is also very small. Now, there's a finger that is pointing at us and that is saying the number is so small because you are not giving that number, however small it is, more work, and that is why we leave the profession. And maybe, yes, we must take responsibility for that. But it's the level of briefing is almost, it's not proportionate, but it's also proportionate to the number of people who are in the at the stage. Any work that we as the Department of Justice, and let me for a minute forget the broader government, any work that we do as the Department of Justice, we brief black people, we brief females, and yes, at an extent we do give some white counsel, but that number is so small as a department. But as this then is a broader reflection of how we brief in terms of government. And the reason why we did have it done in part is because you asked for it, but also in part is what we want to show you going forward, not in this time around, but in the next quarter, is to show in each bar council and show you how many women are in each bar council, and so that you can have a synchronized view of numbers relative to the demand. If I can call it that. So that is how things look at this stage. Where I think we take full responsibility, and I, the head of the organization, take full responsibility for, is the fact that there are some areas of work where, and perhaps we haven't been as strong as we should, and I never regard myself as a strong person, but we should be a lot stronger in pushing back some departments in demanding some cadre. And I'm not even talking about white cadre, but we must do that as well. But if you look at males, you will see that we are reaching a whole lot of males, African males, African males in particular. We are reaching a whole lot of African males, and the statistic even for now is indicating that. The difficulty is not that we are reaching a whole lot of African males. The difficulty is that we are reaching a whole lot of same African males. So he may be briefing hypothetically 10 of men, but they take up their whole line. You understand what I mean? So we are human beings. We want to work with people we've worked with before, who have given us good results before, and the ones that we don't know, we are very loath to take our chances on them, just as a human nature. And so that is where I have taken the issue to my colleagues in Fossage to say, this is how we look. Please, colleagues, do not demand of us to be just one country. And there are those that are popular, I won't mention anybody by name, but that's where, when you say we are failing, we accept that indeed we have failed in the sense that we could have increased the pool of those that we think under the 43%. Similarly, under the white male, we could still do a lot more, because even under the white male, it's the same suspect that we are seeing pretty much all the time. And we've done quite a lot of studies now, analysis of how these numbers look. And these numbers, we believe we can do better in them, but we like the consolidated view, because the consolidated view still tells us that we are briefing a lot more African people and a lot more black people in general than we are briefing the white people. So in that way, you change the dynamic. The only difficulty is that it's still a very small group of people.
There's something there, a perception that you may be briefing more African or black people, but the type of matters that you brief them on are really not big ones. But also, you know, also as government, I think you don't want to lose cases. You want experience too. But is there no way you can ensure that those high-profile people work with junior, who are women, who are black, so that in the process they train them, find a way of ensuring that happens.
Thank you very much, Mr. Tatten. You are quite correct, absolutely correct. To extend, and I'm going to use only that line, the African males, as a line specifically, because I want to illustrate the point. So it's not like I want us to take away from the African males. The point I want to raise is that We part of the exercise that is now happening behind the scenes is to try and do two things and better than. It's not just the veil that we want people to report on. It's what cases exactly are people dealing with, are we bringing people on. Let me use two classical examples. The in the Concord, for the reasons still unbeknown to me at this stage, we prefer one, two African people, but generally we always prefer white people. And I'm saying it's government, not the Department of Justice. So until you've done that analysis, you don't know, because your numbers are looking good, and the numbers don't lie, well, most of the time. But but we don't know. So how come every time we get attacked in the country about that, about the fact that we are not briefing people in the Hong Kong? So what we are now doing is, now that we now have unpacked all of that detail, that's where we are going to make specific interventions. And I had a meeting with my colleagues at Fossat, and in our Fossat reporter, just to address those specific areas now, to say, look, this is what we are going to do. Now, to the second question that the chairperson raised around your seniors, introduce seniors for those seniors. May I say, chairperson, and because I know they come and complain to you as the committee members and as our senior leadership, our own people in general do not want to work with other juniors. Everyone has their own junior, so it's almost a package. I'm not saying all the time, but I'm saying most of the time. It's a package. If you want long career, you better have this junior. Now, there is something good about that, because then they know each other's competencies and capabilities, and we want to encourage that. But where it becomes difficult is that it then closes the opportunity of bringing somebody into the thing. Let me use an example. In this very case that is very popular right now, that the chairman was talking about, and there was discussed in the house the other day or yesterday, we have to say, no matter what you do, we want a junior, a baby junior, and one a female baby junior. And we said, in the end, I said, get me a female baby junior by name, so that there is a baby junior there. Mm-hmm. And that's what we now have to do. And in part, it shouldn't be a duty of the accounting officer, because I'm not the one who's doing the briefing every day. But what we now said we will do is that we want a list of all baby juniors, so that we can, for every case that we brief on, if there is a need for a junior, then we must then introduce a baby junior, so that the baby juniors are exposed in doing research, are exposed in the actual preparation of the documentation, and are exposed in terms of being constantly arguing the matters in court. So it's a matter that is at hand, chosen in fact on the 21st and the 22nd of September, 22nd of September, we are meeting with all the heads of offices to build up with that, so that we can make this a policy, we can write it into a policy, so that it doesn't happen because I like it, it happens because it is the policy of government. Then finally, on my part of issues, I'd like to deal with the issue around the COIS and the fund. Oh yes, and I'd like to deal with the other bits that the chair dealt with on the core rural development. Remember that question? So I'd like to deal with that one as well. But let me start with the COI and the fund. This issue is an issue that we've worked with relevant department for quite a long time now, trying to address these issues, because some of the requests that are being made are requests that go into the heart of our constitution, that goes into the heart of our international obligations as a country. It's a matter that we are not the lead department in, but we are the department that supports traditional affairs. It's culture. We're working together to support them in these big issues of the First Nation status conversation. And I understand that we met with them with Jaden not so long ago, and I understand from where they sit, they should be putting together something that will now be ready for discussion. So it's something that where I would just wish to leave it at that, because we are not the right department to speak to it at least and hold first on it other than the relevant department. Let me then deal with the issue of land restitution as well as the impact on traditional councils and the traditional courts. One of the things that we have been doing in our engagement between the bit of traditional affairs and ourselves have been to say, do not look at the traditional courts outside the total package of the overall governance in traditional communities or rural communities. Look at the traditional courts bill and the traditional court dispensation in the total governance, which will include, among others, the traditional council. Now, when you look at that, you are then saying the traditional councils themselves must be transformed in a manner that they are able to interact with women issues and be able to be populated in part by women, because these are some of the people you are going to draw from when you have your traditional court. So it is a subject that is part of a broader conversation, and on each one of them, we've not only just looked at the traditional courts, we've also looked at a thorough research that traces traditional courts and traditional leadership all the way back, and the various schools of thought, and what is wrong with each school of thought, and how do we want to pull that which is relevant for this work, which then we have already factored into that document. And for the purposes of this, I just wanted to indicate that it's not a matter that we are ignoring. When we come and the difficulty chattering is that on each of the issues that the committee has indicated, we need time to take you through each one of them in the level of detail that you wish us to take you through those issues. And then finally, the CFO will talk to the issue of the third party third party funds, but I just wanted to deal with the thing of the tensions, the constitutionality and all of that. Of course, personally, I hold no view at this stage until we are able to be confronted with a particular issue. But I will say, Chairperson and Honourable Members, that one of the things that the Chairperson bemoans is the fact that we are not training on the Constitution. I will say this, Chairperson, we are slow in the training of the Constitution, and one of the challenges we have indicated was the capacity in our own space, not forget for a minute the Chakana institutions and all of that, just in our own space, because we have also had, given the limitations that the Chakana institutions have, some of the training must be done by the Department of Justice as well. So some of the indicators that we are seeing, where we said we are going to go to each municipality, that's where we want to do the training. So if we say municipality, we are not excluding anybody, we are saying municipal areas as well as where they coexist, the traditional areas and all of that, so that we train people on their rights in terms of the Constitution, certainly, but on their responsibilities in terms of the Constitution and how to access in part some of the institutions that will help them realize their rights. Now, Jonathan, we personally, I chair the steering committee on the implementation of the National Action Plan on racism, xenophobia, and related intolerances. We re-established the committee, and we are sending, we have sent the past few months, and we are sending the balance of the month to take the product to tenants, so that we can then take it out and take it to the people and train on it. So it's not like we have forgotten about it, and that is why you see that in the performance we have only done two sessions, because we want to take it out and then start engaging people, not just the average South Africans that are in communities, but also structures such as NEDLEC. I was at NEDLEC some 2 weeks ago, and we are asking to go and present this issue, because it's not just the National Action Plan on Racism, it's not just an instrument for government, it's a national instrument, and we want everybody, every stakeholder, to take their part in that instrument and go and change it from constituency. Thank you very much, Professor, and I'll move to the CFO to deal with the financial issues. Thank you, Jean.
Thank you, Jason. I think just to start off with the oversight on the entities, I think what we can say is that we are fulfilling all our oversight functions on all of our entities, excluding the public objective. We are in close discussions really with the Human Rights Commission, the SIU Legal Aid Board, and we meet them before entity hearing. So I can honestly say that they are on track with their spending, and we've discussed all the challenges that they experience, and that's been discussed at the NTEC hearing. With the public protector, we have not been, as we're trying to improve our oversight functions, because it's oversight functions in terms of the PSMA, so we will be on a quarterly basis trying to address the receiving of information and fulfilling our legal obligations in that regard. But I'm aware that they do submit their requirements directly to the Minister and to Treasury. But we have not been in discussions with them. It has not been processed so far. So with regard to anyone else, I can give you an opinion, but on with regard to the public protector, we are not in a position to give an opinion. I want to follow up.
Yeah, honorable, do you want to?
Okay. In terms of the TPS thing, I think you are well aware of our challenges in that regard, and I honestly also believe we are on the verge of a breakthrough with regard to TPS, but it's always darkest before dawn. Our challenge, as you are aware, is in relation to, on the one hand, the system. You would find that in this system, they are suddenly, for no reason, transactions are duplicated, even up to 100 times, 1,000 times, and no one can say, how did this happen, why did it happen? So this is our one, and then you would also find, most people would understand in counting that you have two legs of a transaction, you have the debit and the credit. So you would just suddenly found that there's just a one-legged transaction going through. And that has been our challenge, and that is our challenge, and that is why the DG mentioned that we are implementing a new system, which you are also well aware of, and which are then addressing at this stage, and which when we will implement this, the process for us is to ring-fence and to try to separate all those transactions that we cannot, you know, these things that we can't explain. We try to do with that programmatically. We're trying to deal with it systematically and make policy decisions on how to deal with it. And then from a governance perspective, the third party fund bill has been discussed yesterday. I'm aware that it has been thoroughly discussed, so we are quite confident that it will still go through the financial year, which will also give us then the authority to deal with the third party fund as we are currently dealing with it. Thank you.
Just very quick.
Which one is discussing the certificate?
No, I think it went to the JCTS Classroom Duties Committee yesterday. So it's going to go to cabinet and then it will be introduced. I think there was an error there. It will be introduced. No. It's your bill, so you will know about this. Okay. All right. And then perhaps let me just clarify one thing. In terms of introducing bills or amending legislation and needing to be told about it or to be briefed on it, sensitized on it, we will take it back. I think I had always thought that before the bill is introduced, that there is some kind of sensitization that happens. But if that is, has not happened in the recent past, I think we will activate it again. We normally used to take it to the study group just for sensitization, but also if there's anything additional that the honorable committee could let us know how to do the sensitization, we will appreciate it. And I take it that this arises out of the amendment that affected the SIU. I will drift on it and we'll try and do it differently next time. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you. Honorable Bunker.
Yeah, thanks. I think mine is around the issue of the public protection. I think my request to the department would be to look at the way of how do we manage these entities generally and to improve the meetings that they themselves are having. I think there must be quite a proper oversight because public protection, I think, needs even more attention. Because I'm worried even the manner in which they are reporting them. Like the entities, I think there must be a formal report. Because last time I see a report on public protection, I find a relationship between this one and this one to be bizarre. You see, when this language, the use of language, because when an administrative body, you need to use, there are certain language that you must probably use. I think each you may have to think very deep on how we bring this entity together and discuss certain things, like the kind of reporting. If you're an administrative body, you can't use and loose terms and loose or legal terms. We expect you to bring an administrative solution. So I think let's think very hard and see how does the development get to work closely with these entities. Thanks.
Okay. BG, what you actually talked about modernization and IT, what I was also trying to pick up was the offside storage for the music being sorted out. I'm hoping that it has been sorted out and it has been sorted out through technology. So that you don't have like physical files to move from somewhere and in the interim the file gets lost. And remember at some stage to actually get the saving court processes.
You know, we may be concerning the public protector unfairly sometimes. I think that public protector law is badly drafted. Maybe you need to look at that law, because the reporting doesn't seem to be compulsory. If one that would deal with sensitive matters that may be of national interest, and say they may report one say yes, or if requested to do so. Matters of national interest need the consideration of Parliament. Now, if reporting is optional, it means this matter will not come to Parliament. And what does that say? So I think that we need to relook at that legislation, and also you have all these indecisive court decisions. The Supreme Court says no, the public protector is different from the ombudsman, because he can take initiative. But even academics attach different interpretations to that court decision. And then you have the Western Cape court decision. It's not acceptable to some people, whereas it has not been overruled by any other court. Then you have the Home SABC court, Home Affairs court case. Where are those things? It means there's no certainty on the interpretation of the Constitution itself. So why don't you really also internally get a legal opinion to say what does the Constitution mean? Because it puts us in a difficult situation, because we are viewed as being against the public protector. We have to protect the public protector. We can't be against the public protector. But if the law is not clear, we will talk in different tongues, and please you can help us clarify some of these things. Get a legal opinion from your side. And for instance, now they say that we don't want to give the public protector money. We are trying to punish her because she took decisions which we don't like. It's not for us to like or dislike. We want all Chapter 9 institutions to be independent, to do their work without fear or favor, and so on. So we have no personal interest. We just want everybody to do their work, but we need to be assisted by yourself exercising oversight, like, you know, this question of having maybe a template of the reporting, what should be reported on, when, and so on. And we want to recommit to supporting in all Chapter 9 institutions. They are doing important work. We want them to exist, but the lines of communication must be clear.
Then whether the conditions are binding or not,
yes,
then how to handle divisions of the court that been submitted.
So I can see that we have exhausted the issues, but you know, it could be helpful if we borrow the word of Honorable Board of Elevation, please. But if you go back and I isolate those things that must be elevated, so that we have a program of action based on the elevated issues, and then engage on that. But we really appreciate the amount of work you put in, and you apply your mind, you come here clear as to what, how to take things forward. We really appreciate that, and it's a good work out.
Thank you very much, Chair. Just to give Honorable Machad and the Honorable House members the off-site storage work is going on. We spoke earlier about the paperless system. To the extent that we are able to start working on at the paperless level, especially in the mother's environment, there we've made significant progress. So since last year, we haven't opened new physical files, so all of the work is now done electronically. But obviously, the historic files are then still, we still have that off-site storage business on historic files. But then, generally in the court, we are digitizing. But when I said earlier that we are going to come to a head at systems level, because as you digitize, you migrate information to your to your offsite at the systems level. Unless your system capacity grow, you are not going to put all that information there. So those are some of the things that we are working on to ensure that that project is sustainable and it moves from being outsourced into being run by the department, and we can then get different options. Now with the cloud, I think we can start looking at other possibilities of storing information.
So you trust the best that they will follow up on this mission.
I agree there is always that risk, but we also live in the modern day South Africa, and we can't rely too much now because there's no space. Our biggest difficulty is space, physical space. And if you were to go to the Devon High Court today, you wouldn't be able to walk to get to five, literally. So that's why we have to look at other options of storing information. Thank you very much.
Okay, honorable members and DG and the team, and members of the media, thank you for your attendance, and you are at the meeting. I need something like this.
Have a take a look at the attendance register, please.